and educating others on the importance of being in a union. And I tell my family members, get in a union. Not only for the security, for the pension, or for the pay scale, but also for the acknowledgement of what's the rights for worker rights.
So again, thank you for listening today, and I issue my apologies that Dr. Loretta Johnson was not able to make it with us tonight. We will be in contact with her because we would really like for you to hear her views regarding education and what's happening with this turn of events as far as the country going global. And so that indeed has an impact of which we need to be able to respond to. So again, thank you very much for joining us here on Labor Radio, CBTU. Holla!
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 6th Annual Teaching with Purpose Conference on October 9th and 10th at Park Rose Middle School, located at 11800 Northeast Shaver Street, Portland, Oregon. The Teaching with Purpose Conference provides information, tools, and materials relating to culturally responsive teaching. The conference aims to address legislation relating to culturally responsive education in Oregon and around the country. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Vibe of Portland's fall fundraising event, October 2nd from 5 to 9 at Tabor Space in Portland. Vibe exists because arts education is missing in today's daily educational system. Vibe connects local teaching artists who are passionate about bringing their love of music and visual arts to the students they work with. At this event, you can learn about where Vibe has been this last year and see where they're headed. There will be food, a silent auction, and entertainment by the Barra Brown Trio. Again, that's the Vibe of Portland's fall fundraising event, October 2nd from 5 to 9 at Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. And I'm your host this evening for Prison Pipeline, Carlos Chavez. In the studio, I've got a couple friends of mine, Abel Madujano and Gaetano. Is it okay if I call you Gaetano? Our guy, Mataliano. Two friends of mine who are actually volunteers of mine for my organization, Morpheus Youth Project. And we're going to talk about a number of different things today. We've got a number of different areas that we'd like to cover. And the reason that we're covering these topics is to, you know, our whole point is to kind of give a perspective that we don't always get a chance to hear from. And to also really just kind of share some experiences that some of us have experienced. And then also just to give folks a chance to hear things from just from another perspective. So we want to talk about things like gang culture. We want to talk about things like like being incarcerated, like what the realities of being incarcerated are, and then also what it means, you know, when you're being released from incarceration, you're getting back into the public. I mean, there's so much that goes on. I think what a lot of people don't understand is that when somebody does get adjudicated, when somebody is facing the court system, and they go through that process, the last that anybody ever really kind of understands or remembers or sees of anybody is that picture of them in the paper. That is the last piece of any kind of humanity that anybody has when they go into the system. But those people are still living, breathing people, and they still have to deal with whatever it is that they're facing. And there's quite a bit that goes on that a lot of people don't know about. I mean, I think people's perspectives on, you know, gang culture, on, you know, what it's like to be incarcerated, tends to come from TV, you know, and a lot of really slanted and really just not very realistic perspectives on what this stuff is about. And so today, what I'm hoping we can do is kind of shake a little bit of that and get folks to kind of understand a more human perspective on what that looks like. So, like I said, my friends Abel and Guy are with me today. I want to thank you guys both for being with me today.
Yeah, absolutely.
No problem. It's a pleasure to be here, man. Yeah. Absolutely. Feels good to be here.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to have you guys. Abel was actually one of my students in McLaren for a little while, Youth Corrections. Yeah. He was in my radio group, and we've had some pretty interesting conversations. It's always a trip, you know. It's one thing to have a relationship with one of my students while they're there at McLaren, but when they actually get out and we get to kind of we get to reflect on things and talk about different things, it's a whole nother thing. And so you know, I do feel a sense of I just really appreciate the fact that you guys are comfortable enough to kind of talk with me about some of these things, and that you guys have the type of, you know, you guys share a certain amount of passion for working with youth and getting involved with those who are incarcerated and those who are dealing with some of these issues. So I just want to give you guys props for that.
Yeah, thanks, bro.
So let's go ahead and jump right into the first thing. You know, one of the things that, you know, when we talk about gang culture, you know, both of these gentlemen have been involved in some way, shape, or form with that culture. I myself have been around it, but I've never been formally, jumped in or anything like that to a gang. But I'm very familiar. I grew up in California, and actually what I see out here in Oregon is a lot, you know, a lot of the gangs that are out here are actually gangs that originated in Los Angeles.
Absolutely.
And even in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And even in Chicago and other places too. But I would say probably Los Angeles is probably the biggest influence on a lot of the gangs that are out here. And these guys are nodding their head in agreement. So,
yeah.
So I guess I'm correct there. But I think the first question that everybody kind of has in their mind when all of this, when we talk about gang culture is, you know, everybody wants to wonder what is it that actually gets people involved in gangs? You know, what is it that draws them? So go ahead, man. You look like you're ready to respond, Abel. So I'll let you kind of jump on that question first, and then Guy will give you a chance to jump in there too.
Cool.
It's a number of things. One of them is not having an exemplary role model, father role model, or someone who you look up to. Sure. I always had a father, you know what I'm saying? He was a good dude. Growing up, he was a good dude to me, and I loved him, and I still do. However, as I got older, I started realizing a lot of things on my own. You know, I started putting a lot of things into perspective. And he had issues that he wasn't able to control. Due to that, I grew up angry, you know what I mean, with him, because my mother picked up his slack, and so anger has something to do with that sometimes. And sometimes to release the anger as a kid, you go around tagging up the walls, and you know what I mean, your testosterone starts to kick in at a certain age, and you're just like reckless. You say whatever, man, I'm all ears and ears. So that has something to do with it, you know, being mad at somebody or confused, not understanding what it is. Because now, today, to this very day, I'm still kind of disappointed in my father. But I understand. I understand that people go through certain things. I understand people are in some situations, whether it's alcoholism or whatever, gambling. But I understand that he had a problem with that. And at age 24 now, I mean, I haven't talked to him in a long time, but I forgive him. But it is time to move on. And so, but anger and confusion is definitely one of the reasons why people get into the things that they get into. They're ignorant. They don't know anything about life. They think they know all the answers at a young age. You say, I'm going to be a game banger for the rest of my life. And it's a business. Yeah. And you know what I mean? And part of that business is going to jail. And you're just like, I accept it. I want to go to jail. But when you're in jail, that's a whole different thing, man. But yeah.
You agree with that, guy?
Absolutely. I could definitely say that it all starts at a young age, you know, and you know, as children, especially young men, you know, we always looking up to our father, you know, to be our example as you know, what being a man looks like, you know. And a lot of the time we don't have the best role models, like he was telling you. And you know, and sometimes you don't even have a father. You know, I had a lot of my friends, you know, that grew up without even ever knowing their father, but behind bars, you know, they get to know their father between, you know, glass walls and things like that. And you know, in the streets, you know, poverty is everywhere, and you know, the majority of us come from families who have nothing. You know, you're just eating you know, tortillas and frijoles and, you know, beans and tortilla, you know. So you know poor, you know. And and then in these areas, you don't have a good education or things like that. Your father's not around, you know. You have these problems in your life, and then you're hungry, you know. You see your family is hungry, you know? And I mean, eventually you turn to the streets, you know. So you have a bad role model. You don't have a role model. You find these guys in the neighborhoods, you know, and the first thing they want to do is help you. And at least that's how it started with me, you know. These we call them OGs, or, you know, or
veteranos,
eso sí. And you know, they always are so friendly in the beginning, you know. They just show so much love, and then the first thing, you know, your mind is like, man, this is like, I'll do anything for this guy, you know. He shows me so much love. He's teaching me how to make money, teaching me how to be a man, you know. And a lot of us find our role models like that in the street. And you know, eventually that friendship turns into something else. And I mean, it's just it's an interesting involvement, but I could definitely say it does start at a young age, and it does start with a lack of a proper role model. And the unfortunate thing is, you know, we can't really blame our fathers too much, because majority of the time our fathers did not also have a role model. You know, they were on the same page, they were in the same boat. Especially in the case of my father, you know, he never knew his father well. He never really knew what it meant to be a dad. I think me and my father, we shared more of a, it's funny to say, but he was more like my OG. You know, we didn't really have a father-son relationship. He was mostly my teacher through the life of the street. You know, he taught me, you know, how to sell drugs, what drugs made the most money. He taught me how to, you know, do a lot of the stuff that was not the best. So I can definitely, yeah, I definitely relate to what you're saying. And yeah, I definitely think it does start at a young age, and it does start with a lack of role model, definitely.
Well, so at what point, because there's a certain stage where you go from being a, you know, just being a youth, being a kid who goes to school, who's doing, you know, what most normal kids would do. You know, you go to school, you know, struggle with your grades, you know, you got a family, you know, you do, or you may not, but you're maintaining as a young kid normally would. But then there's a point where that starts to kind of transition. And what would you say is, because I know that those are contributing factors that you mentioned, but how much does, you know, does the rest of, you know, the social infrastructure that you're living around or in, how much does that have to contribute? And I'll give you an example. You know, I work with youth, you know, you guys know that. And, you know, some of them are at middle school age. And, you know, there are a lot of times, oftentimes people will tell me, hey, we really need Latino role model for these young guys. Can you talk to them? You know, I don't know. I mean, they won't listen to us, you know, and it's, you know, it's usually a white administrator, you know, who does want something good for these kids, you know, but doesn't know how to go about doing it. You know, there's usually a good cultural divide that's going on there, that there's just a big disconnect. But also, they just really struggle to connect with the youth, and so they'll talk to me and say, hey, can you talk to these kids? And I get to know them. And even more so, I would say lately, now that I've been getting to know their families a little bit more, I'm starting to uncover a lot of the evidence or some of the reasons to why these kids are getting, you know, having behavioral issues and not being able to focus in school and stuff like that. And it's for a number of the reasons that you guys have mentioned already. I have kids whose parents they work two, three jobs. Mm-hmm. And they're not home, you know. I have kids where the kids won't show up at school for certain days, and I'll talk to them. Hey, where were you yesterday? You know, I had to watch my little sister. You know, whatever, because of whatever, you know. And so, you know, they get taken out of school, or they're not able to do any of the after school programs because that's something that they have to focus on. But what I see is a lot of these kids that are used to their you know, those role models. You know, even though that they have family members, they have fathers, they have mothers, but because they're working, they're not at home, and they're not only are they not being a role model because they're absent, but they're also not there to discipline, you know, and to show, you know, what it truly means to be, you know, a young adult or to be responsible or anything like that. And so when they get to school and they face those adults that are wanting to discipline them and that they don't really know, that they may not trust, they may not be comfortable with, then they start running into problems. How much of that do you think kind of contributes? Because really what I'm getting to here is there's that transition that takes place is all of a sudden youth no longer are being looked at as kids. Now they're starting to be, people are starting to focus on, like, you know, the way that they dress and the way that they talk and you know, whether their cultural background plays a big role in it, and there's this criminalization process that starts to take place. How early do we see that, and what is that looking like?
You see that it all depends on what type of community. Mm-hmm. Within the Hispanics, I know it starts kind of early. Hispanics, oh, yeah. And blacks.
Oh, yeah.
African Americans. It starts pretty early. I would say 12 years old.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking like 10 or 11.
Yeah. Something around their age.
Absolutely.
But what's the difference? What's the divide? I mean, what is when you say it starts that young, it doesn't start that young for other kids?
Oh, you know what I think it is? It's like, especially with the Latino community, you know, I mean, you know, in the difference between a white community, you know, they speak in the same language, you know, white people, they're speaking this, or I should say however you want it to say it, but they speak the same language as their children, you know? So when their children coming home or whatever they're doing, you know, they're always a little more involved. You know, in a Latino community, most of the, you know, our parents, they just speak Spanish and we running around, you know, we're talking in, you know, in our language and doing our thing, and the culture is different, you know?
Also, exactly, the culture. I was about to say the culture is different because it's like, one, there's more of us. And when I say more of us, I mean as in unprivileged minorities. There's a lot more Mexican and African Americans who don't have food in their fridge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And because of that, like I said, it's all propaganda in some way. Street propaganda that a lot of the OGs sell you.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And they tell you, you know, come with us. We'll love you. We'll care about you. We'll buy you some clothes.
Yeah, you don't need like school.
Yeah. We'll you'll make money with us. That's what will happen.
Take care of your family.
Exactly. And the transitioning could start at a very young age, and
so what you're saying is that you're basically kind of indoctrinated. Like, exactly. They're conditioning you to prepare you for this.
They train you, and what happens when they're training you? They're telling you things. When you get arrested by the cops, you don't say nothing. If you say something, you're not gonna be able to come around anymore. And at a kid, one, you're not only afraid of getting your, you know, you're not getting hurt. Or your family getting hurt, but you're also afraid of not being accepted and not Absolutely. Having any friends. Absolutely. Like, hey, if I say something, these guys are not going to be my friend anymore. And at a young age, you're just like, man. But like you said, it has a lot to do with mom having to, like I said, my mom picked my father's slack. So she worked three jobs at one point, and I never saw her. And she was always working. And With all honesty, I was a good kid. You know what I mean? And I think we were all there at one point, whether you're a gang member or not. You know what I'm saying? I was a good kid. I played basketball. I didn't do drugs for the very long time. I didn't even do drugs until like I was, freshman in high school, you know? And there's kids who've done it earlier and started game banging earlier than I did. I just kind of got into it big time because I felt like it was my responsibility to carry on the name, and it was just pride in the end of the day. And my transitioning went from being a good kid and playing basketball and knowing sports and wanting to play sports as I got older, and then all of a sudden, the next year, I'm like a whole different person. And I dropped out of high school. And when I dropped out of high school, I didn't have no ambition to do good. And when that kicked in, is when I got arrested.
So it kind of snowballed.
Yeah. At age 17, I got arrested for what we know as the Measure 11, something that's been around for a while now.
What is Measure 11?
Measure 11 is a ballot that the Oregon legislators passed in 96?
95.
They passed it in 95 to incarcerate individuals who commit person-to-person crime. And basically what that means is if you're 15 years or older and you commit a robbery, you can steal a pack of gum. Trust me, I've seen people go to jail for stealing a pack of gum. They're getting 5 years. I know, I was just kind of like, what are you doing, man? It's a pack of gum. But you could do the pettiest thing and go to jail for a very long time. It's
a minimum
mandatory sentence guidelines that the Oregon State Legislature passed in 95. And unfortunately for myself, because of the transitioning and the way it went for me, and how I went about it, I got caught up on it, and at a very young age. I mean, really, I got arrested the first time when I was 14, but it was some petty stuff, and they let me go home to my mom. But that one time, I was charging as an adult. I was in a facility with older adults who then, again, influenced me.
When you were 14?
No, 17. I'm sorry.
Later. Okay.
Yeah, later on. So when you're around older people who have tattoos on their face, and you're just kind of like, oh, this guy's cool. I like this guy's stilo.
So you start, you know, you start what I mean? To look up to him.
Yeah. So it's kind of like,
it's a mix, man. I mean, I would say it's absolutely it's like a cocktail. You know what I mean? So you have a bad role model. You're poor. You know, you're a young kid. You know, you're looking for acceptance. You want to be cool. You want to, you know, you want pride and stuff like this. You're watching TV. You know, you're listening to the radio, and it's constantly the same message, the same message. You know, you want to be a baller, shot caller. You know, this, that. You know, you
wanna even be a more gangster. So now, yeah.
Even more so now, absolutely
like,
now.
It's like this. I've been listening to rap for a very long time. I as a matter of fact, I've listened to rap possibly all my life. I don't really listen to corridos or anything like that. It's really not my thing. You know what I'm saying? Consider I'm a first generation Mexican American, and I should probably be listening to that kind of stuff, but I don't. And I was educated to Tupac. I was educated through Biggie Smalls.
Absolutely.
You know, when you hear Biggie Smalls Tupac talk about Juicy and how, you know, doing the things he did to feed his daughter, you look up to people, you're like, man, this guy,
this is a survivor.
It's a survival,
you know,
it's a method.
He's a survivor. Exactly. That's a survivor. And then you're living in this neighborhood, and you're gonna survive.
Yeah, you put that into perspective and to your own eyes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, that was my poetry right there when it came. I didn't read no Shakespeare, you know what I mean? I didn't do any of that. I listened to Tupac. Biggie Smalls. And
you touched on something that I think is really important. Survival.
Right.
You guys both are talking about survival. And I think, I'll tell you, actually, so that gives, that's two things, which I say are, I think are pretty intertwined, that I recognize from, you know, now I've been working at McLaren for about 5 years doing what I do. But I'm also now at the juvenile justice facility. And, you know, I work with youth that are getting involved in some of these things in school. You know, I can tell you one thing. I used to say there's one thing that I would see that every kid has in common. But now that you say that, I think it's two, really. They in some ways are one and the same, but I think two. And one of them, as I would say, is that every one of those kids is in survival mode. That's running into the trouble that they're running into.
Absolutely.
Whether they're starting to be... to have some contact with law enforcement, or whether they've been involved in it for quite some time. But the other thing that I think a lot of people overlook is, and you know, tell me if I'm wrong, trauma. How much does trauma have to do with this? Because when I uncover some of the stories, you know, one thing that, you know, about teaching radio to young people is that I have an opportunity to kind of to give them a chance to kind of speak on things and give their opinion and to share their stories. And when they share those stories, sometimes you unearth some stuff that's just, wow, you know. I mean, sometimes there's stuff that I just, that's going to stay in the can, you know. That's your info, yeah, but you got to release it today, you know. And you know, I hear stories about youth that are, they get involved because of somebody really close to them who has been hurt, or somebody, you know, or something like that, or they've had to deal with some kind of an experience in their life that really, really, like, it really hurt them, you know, some way, shape, or form, whether it's mentally or physically, you know.
For me, I remember this day like it was yesterday. And I still wasn't really gang active. I was just in a mix. And when I say that, I was more associated. I would hang out with them, I would, you know, because of my brothers and my cousins, and I would speak to them. But they weren't really my friends, because at that point, I was still going to school and I was still being a good kid. I even dressed funny, okay? You know what I mean? I didn't dress like a gangster. So it was like, for me, and like I said, at this point, I was still doing good, was when my house got shot up for the first time. And a bullet went through my mom's bedroom. You know what I mean? That kind of pissed me off. Or made me mad. But other than that, that was probably the biggest thing for me, is being
so angry. you think that's one of those things that helped to kind of transition?
Yeah, that made me be like, okay, I'm gonna retaliate, or I'm just,
it's all love.
Exactly. It's like, you're not only going after my brothers at that point, because like I said, I was doing good, but you're going after my whole family. That bullet went through my mom's window.
It
and
is
her,
definitely.
In her wall. So it's not even about a game at that point. You got really personal with me. And like,
that's what
we're
all
we're all Hispanics here, so when it comes to family, you know, especially your mom, or anybody, you don't have to be Hispanic, but when it comes to your mom, you know, it changes everything. It changes the way you look at things, and it's just like, if you're going to be careless like that, then we're going to take it there. And that's just how it's
I can definitely say that's what gets a lot of people, you know. That's what, you know. So okay, so we go to the streets, you know, and we hear about all these people killing each other and this and that, and you know, a lot of people who have no idea what's going on the outside, they look in and say, oh, look how stupid these people are, how crazy this person is, you know. They killed this guy, you know. What is wrong with that person? Put that person in jail, you know. But take your son, for example. Take maybe your daughter or your son, you know. Maybe you have like a 3-year-old daughter or a 4-year-old daughter, something, you know, like someone you love more than anything, and somebody comes into your house and they kill your child, you know. And there's nothing you can tell me that, you know, I know you're gonna feel some hate, you know. You're gonna have that feeling inside you strong, you know. And you're gonna, or if someone took your son, I mean, it's just, you know, man, it's a hard way to put it into perspective, but basically it comes out of love, you know. You love your people so much, you know. And a lot of times, like you were just saying, you know, you're not even really from the gang, you know. But, you know, these are your people, man. You love them, you know, your cousins, your brothers, even your father, maybe, you know. And someone comes and shoots up your house or shoots your people, you know. Your first reaction is like, oh, my God, you know, I'm going to find you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's terrible, you know what I mean? It is really, really difficult to just let that slide, you know, and to just, you know, to try to just, I mean, it's almost impossible, you know. So I mean,
Well, I want to remind you guys that you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. This is Prison Pipeline, and I'm here with Abel and with Guy, and we're talking about quite a number of things. But what's crazy is that we've just cracked the bottle right now. We haven't even really had a chance. We're kind of closing, getting towards the end of this program, and we've barely even been able to touch the tip of the iceberg about what, you know, these guys have really, you know, been able to experience because of all this. And I think we're going to have another show, you know, where we're able to kind of dive into this even further, because one thing that I really want people to know about, and we have just a tiny bit of time left, and before we go, I want to give you guys a chance to kind of maybe offer some ideas as to kind of, you know, what do we do about this? You know, what is it that we're going to do to help, you know, young people understand that, you know, that it hurts, you know, to go through this, you know, that it hurts to experience this. And when it's all said and done, you know, this isn't really where you want to be.
Absolutely.
How do we reach young people and how do we get them to understand that?
I think definitely that more people like me, like myself and my buddy Abel here, you know, people who have gone through this, we need to reach out to the children in our communities and let them know what we know. Because I can tell you right now, in the days when I was getting jumped in the hood, you know, when I really started doing all this stuff, no one ever told me what I was really getting into, you know. They just told me money, women, power, you know, you're going to be, you know, and doing it for your side, you know, this and that. But I think that definitely more people who've been through this and see this for themselves need to step out and really, you know, get involved with children and do their part. That's, you know, that's my mission. I think it's as well as Abel's as well, you know.
That was a good way to put it too. Do your part.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. It is definitely our responsibility, you know.
Yeah.
It's not until we stop thinking that someone outside of the community is going to help us, because no one outside of the community is going to care about the community like the way the people who live in the community do, you know.
Exactly.
It's our responsibility.
And my thing, I totally agree with that. I'm 100% with him on that. And something I've been touching upon and something I've really, 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 really want to touch on is unity.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter if you're Hispanic. It doesn't matter if you're Black. It doesn't matter if you're Asian or Caucasian. I think we all need to get together and figure out a way to have this social change. Figure out a way how to work on poverty, because that's the first step.
Finding some common ground.
Yes, because like I mentioned to you before, Carlos, poverty is a new one to me. It's a minority.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Because we all share. We're all hungry. You know what I mean?
It's
whether you're
Black,
whether you're Hispanic, whether you're, like I said, Caucasian, Asian. A lot of us, the reason why we get into this stuff is because, you know, because we live in the, you know, poor neighborhoods or we don't. Our education levels are really low and we just don't care.
And what is the lesson? Exactly. What is the lesson the media is teaching us? They're not teaching us, go get a job, go get a career, get you a business. Nah, man, that's not what we're getting taught.